First, your name.
Okay, my name is Eric Hansen.
And tell me your history with the State Division of Mining.
Okay, initially, after I got my geology degree from the university in 1971, I worked for a mining company called, or exploration company called Resource Associates. And we were out prospecting and staking claims, and that's where I first got into recording mining claims and filing them with the state. And after that, I became an employee of the state Division of Mining in 1989. So I was sort of a mining information specialist, if you will, in this building where people would come in asking questions about land status, mining, how to stake claims, how to maintain claims, how to pay the claim rent, and all these sort of things. So I worked for the state from 89 to 95. And then I terminated my job and became an independent consultant, which I am still today. So That's sort of my background.
Yeah. So you've seen, you were in 1980, late 80s, early 90s, but you saw a lot of the claim staking going on then.
Yes, I did. I saw that it all depends on what the price of the metals are. You know, you have highs and lows over the years. I've seen a number of changes in the regulations for state mining claims and prospecting sites. In the early days, the maximum size of a state mining claim was 40 acres, but in, I think, about 2000 or maybe 2001, you were allowed to stake claims up to 160 acres, which would eliminate a little bit of field work. However, the claim rent was such that there would be no saving whether you had a 40-acre claim or 160-acre claim. Simply, a 160-acre claim was four times as expensive to keep as a 40-acre claim.
I always wondered, I always thought it was like you were allowed one claim or two claims, you know, discovery claim and then one more claim on a creek, but...
No, that, you may be talking about some very old federal regulations. There has been no limit to how many state mining claims you could stake. In the 70s and the 80s, there was a limit to how many prospecting sites you could stake. It used to be, let me see if I get that right, it used to be 8 prospecting sites per recording district per year. And then a number of people would stake 8 prospecting sites sort of December 31st and another 8 the following day, which was, and I've been doing that. I have done that for my company, and I tell you, that was very cold. back then, the reason you have a prospecting site is because to stake a valid mining claim, you must have made a discovery. A prospecting site gives you the sole right to stake a claim after you make your discovery. So you stake a prospecting site because you have good feelings and good vibes for the area. Then you have 2 years where you alone have the right to prospect. And if you find something, then you can stake your claim on top of that. And also, in the earlier days, there was no claim rent
on a prospecting site. So it was cheaper to stake a prospecting site, but now they have changed the rules such that you pay a $200 fee for a prospecting site. So there is really no advantage to staking a prospecting site rather than mining claims, except, I suppose, for the fact that if you really haven't made a discovery, you would sleep better at night by staking a prospecting site and not perjure yourself and say you have made a discovery. Yeah. But that's a separate issue. So.
Yeah. Did you see a lot more claim staking in the past, or is it still continuing?
Boy, I used to keep track of that when I worked for the state, how many claims were staked on a year-to-year basis. But I haven't kept track of that. I think, again, it depends on the price of the metals. I know back in 74, 75, the company, Resource Associates, we were out staking claims all over the place because the price of metals were up, especially gold was up. Then after that, the price of gold goes down. There's some hiatus. Now you're stuck with all these mining claims and claim rent and very few exploration dollars. So it comes in waves. Currently, I think it is very difficult for junior mining companies to raise funds to finance exploration in the state. So we are sort of at a little bit of a low right now, but that too shall pass, you know.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of recreational people out there that don't know much about claim staking and stuff. Do you see some of them coming through here and finding out how to stake a claim?
Yes, I do. And here at DNR in Fairbanks, they're very helpful at the front counter with handouts, they have, as you mentioned, how to stake a mining claim. They have the mining claim forms. If people have specific questions, they can go into the Division of Mining here at the office, and they too are very helpful getting people on the right track as far as staking a claim. So, but a lot of people come up thinking you can go out and stake a claim and get rich. That is not the case, because we would all be rich. But so, for the sort of the summer prospector or the panner and stuff, I always look at it as a hobby. You can have a great time, but in most cases, whatever you spend on gasoline will not be covered by the gold you find. So it's not a lucrative hobby. Most hobbies are not really that lucrative anyway. And it'll get you outdoors and see nature, pick blueberries, see bears, get bitten by mosquitoes, and have a good time.
But you have to research your land status ahead of time.
You have to make sure where you're going so you don't get in troubles. There are, in Alaska, of course, there are many land categories. There's state land, there's federal land, native land, privately owned land, and you just need to make sure you know where you go and make sure you don't go and recreational mine on somebody else's mining claims. That is not smart, unless you have permission to do so. In many cases, if you want to go and pan a creek that is owned by somebody, you can get permission by the owner to do that. In other cases, the owners would politely tell you where else you can go. So.
Yeah.
So coming back to land status, yes, they here at DNR in Fairbanks, they can help you, showing you where the land is and is it state, so state land, and even if it is state land, some lands are close to location of mining claims for various reasons. You still can go and do your recreational mining with a pick and a shovel and maybe a little high bank or stuff like that, but you cannot stake any mining claims on it. So you really need to know where you're going to do your stuff before you head out in the field. Also, with modern computers and stuff, the DNR has wonderful websites that you, if you know what you're doing, you can sit at home and do all your work prior to go out in the field. You can research the land status at home. You can research the recorder's office information to see if new claims have been staked. So you have to be up to speed on that one.
Yeah.
But it is possible, and DNR and the information counter here will give you websites. So if you know what you're doing, you could certainly research it at home.
Yeah. Let's talk about the state mining claim itself. It's 40 acres.
Yes.
Do they like it north, south, east, west?
Not only do they like it, it has to be. Until 1989, I believe, you could stake a state mining claim in any direction you wanted, which would be handy if you wanted to stake a creek. Let's say the creek is running sort of northeast, southwest. You could just lay out your claim block, the 40 acres by 40 acres, sort of like a long worm going down the creek. But after that, I think it started in 1990, all new state mining claims had to be located in the four cardinal directions, unless you, for some reason, if you butt up to privately owned land, then of course you cannot do it normally you would not be able to do it in a north, south, east, west direction. And then you would need a special mining claim form called a traditional mining claim. Otherwise, you would do what they call an MTRSC claim, which stands for Meridian Township Range and Section. And those claims have to be north, south, and east, west.
And you have to brush out the corners now? You know, I mean, all the lines?
See, that's a tricky question. It used to be that you have to brush your lines and, of course, put a post on each of the four corners of your mining claim. And but the regulations since probably 2001, it does not address the issue of brushing the lines. It still says you have to post place the post on the four corners, but it doesn't talk about brushing the lines. So, it would behoove you to either brush the lines or mark the lines with flagging, so people would know that there is a claim in the area and you're crossing the line. But with modern day claim staking, which is a separate issue where people hire a helicopter and drop claim posts out of the helicopter, I take issue with that because that's not the way it's supposed to be done. And it does say that you have to erect the post on each of the four corners, And the, how, when you do, when you drop it out of a helicopter, that, you don't really erect that post. You just hope that it hits the ground somewhere and it stands up. And another rule is that, I just had a good thought. anyway, the rule is that you may try to stake your claim in the quarter section, which is required. However, wherever the post is on the ground is controls the location of your claim. Okay, so that's an issue. I would not recommend anybody to stake claims out of the helicopter. You can get it fairly close with a GPS in the helicopter, but guaranteed you will not be accurate, which means you would have fractions. And I know of some claim staking service in Anchorage that actually drops the claim post out of a fixed wing aircraft. And of course they can cover hundreds of claims in a day. You know, when I was working for the mining company, we are staking claims the hard way, brushing the lines, putting the post in and dragging a chain to make sure it's the right lengths and all that stuff. And we could do 5 to 8 claims a day. Now, dropping your claims out of a fixed-wing aircraft, you could do several hundred in a day, charge your client a huge fee, but that's not accurate.
Yeah.
You didn't know that one, did you?
No, I didn't. Oh, that's okay. Yeah. What about claim jumping? Has that ever happened?
Oh, I would suspect it happens all the time. There could be, suppose you, Roger, you have a claim out there and somebody comes and stake a claim on top of you, that would be considered claim jumping when that claim jumper records his claim and files it with DNR. DNR will send him a notice and with a copy to you saying that it appears that there might be a claim conflict. But DNR does not get involved in claim conflict because it is a civil matter between the two parties. For instance, that the claim jumper could argue that you didn't do your assessment work as you claimed you did, and therefore your claim is not valid, so you would have to simply take that to court. There is a difference if you have a block of state mining claims and you convert them to an upland mining lease, which you can, then you have a stronger title, because if somebody stakes a claim over your upland mining lease, then DNR will simply tell that person, the claim jumper, that he has no rights. So if you have a very good prospect and want to develop it further, then it would be a smart thing to convert your block of mining claims to an upland mining lease to get that stronger title. The conversion is not going to cost you any more claim rent. A 40-acre claim is so many dollars per acre, and your upland mining lease would be on a per acre basis, so you don't pay any more money for that.
Let's go to the cost. That's a big question there.
Uh-huh.
The lease cost.
Right.
Does it stay fixed?
It just like your state mining claim, the claim rent for estate mining claim goes up every 5 years. You have first 5 years is reasonable, the next 5 years is somewhat more expensive, and after the first 10 years, then it gets really expensive. And the rate, the rent structure is exactly the same for an upland mining lease. And then to complicate matters a little bit, every 10 years, all rent goes up. And that is that is based on the consumer price index in Anchorage that DNR is required to raise the claim rent or the upland mining lease rent accordingly.
Where did it start, the lease fee? Was it around $100? $25, was it?
Right now, I think the lowest fee for a 40-acre claim is $35 a claim. So the fee structure is exactly the same. So if you figure out a 40-acre claim, $35, it's roughly a dollar an acre, so it'll be roughly a dollar an acre for your upland mining lease. So that's the same. It takes DNR about a year to issue you your upland mining lease, but there's a little bit of paperwork involved, but it is not serious. So.
Mm-hmm. The $35 then will increase over time, and what would it top out at this point in time?
Okay, right now the second is from $35 to $70, and right now it tops out at $140 for a 40-acre claim. Of course, a 160-acre claim would simply be four times as much.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So it gets expensive the more claims.
It does get expensive. A lot of people tend to become married to their claims, if you will. While I was working for the state, I was collecting the mining claim rent. People would come in and look at the mining claim rent bill and sweat a little bit and always decide, well, okay, I'm going to pay it this year, but next year I'm really going to go out and do some work on these claims. And a year later, they would come in, sit down, sweat a little bit, and say, well, I really didn't do a lot, but next year for sure. So people get emotionally attached to and there's nothing wrong with that, except it's sort of an expensive attachment.
Yes.
I'm not pointing fingers.
Yeah, right.
But you know what I'm talking about.
I agree, yes, indeed, yeah. I'm going to drop some claims.
Yes, that's true. And now, you can do that. If you have a block of claims and they're getting expensive, they're getting up to the $140 per claim basis, you have the right to drop your claims. But you cannot restate your claims for a whole year. So if you drop your claims, it's open for anybody else to stake the claims, and most often nobody stakes them, and you can restake them the following, after a year has lapsed, and start at the lower range again, which could save you some money. So, but then you have to ask yourself, well, if the claim is not any better than I'll drop it for a year, why do I have it? So, but that's a separate issue. So
yeah, right. Well, okay. Yeah. Oh yeah, the state claim placer load versus federal.
Yes. There's a huge difference. In case of federal mining claims, you have to distinguish whether you are staking the claim for the load potential or for the placer potential. And there are two different kinds of claims. So if you have a federal placer claim, you do not own the load rights, and vice versa. However, if you stake a state mining claim, you have the mineral rights to all minerals from the placer down to the load, to the core of the earth. So,
do you see a lot of people switching from federal claims to state claims?
I have seen it sometimes, and I have helped some clients converting from federal claims to state claims, but it is not an easy issue, and quite often you cannot do that. You can only convert your federal claims to state mining claims if the state has selected and received title to the land surrounding your claims. In other words, if it is federal land and you have federal claims on it, and the surrounding land is federal, there's no way you can convert it to state. It has to be such that the state has gotten title to the surrounding land, and your federal claims is an inholding within the state ownership of the land. Therefore, both the state and the feds would like to convert that to state ownership for land management purposes. It's sort of silly to have little blocks of federal ownership throughout Alaska state land. So that's it.
Yeah. So how would you advise someone coming up to proceed in terms of looking for a claim?
Well, that's a tough one. I used to tell people, if you look at a topographic map, I think the 150 some odd quadrangle maps covering the state of Alaska. If you look at some of the more popular quadrangle maps like Big Delta, Circle, Fairbanks, Livengood, where mining has taken place in the past, if you look at these maps, you will see that some areas have a whole bunch of names of the creeks, whereas other areas have lots of little creeks with no names. It should give you an indication that the old timers were there. They were prospecting. They probably would find some stuff, and that's why there are names on these creeks. There are also, on some of the maps, you can see there are indications there was a cabin there sometime. Either it was a miner's cabin or a trapper's cabin. By the names, you can look at something like Eureka Creek, Too Much Gold Creek, Nugget Creek. That should tell you that if there's a cabin there, it probably was not a trapper's cabin. So you would need to look for that first. Gold is found where somebody else has already found some in the neighborhood. It would be probably a little risky or unwise to think that here's a map with absolutely no names. I'm going to go out and find it. Probably not. Okay. So, and the other thing is that we have a sparse road system in Alaska, but the roads are here for a reason, and most of the reason is old mining activity. So accessibility is better. In areas where there's some mining potential. Of course, there are also more people prospecting out there. Mm-hmm. So. So that's the flip side of that. So
it's a good way to start, though.
Yeah. It's a good way to start. So
look for the names, check where other people have found gold, and then check the land status, make sure there are no claims in the area at this time.
I think you covered it.
Are we done?
Well, yeah, unless you'd like to add some, you know.
No, probably not on the record, but.
You want me to turn it off, eh?
Yeah, just for a sec.
Tell me about the filing year in terms of state regulations.
Okay, the state requires you to do assessment work on your claims on a yearly basis, and the assessment year runs from September 1 to September 1. And so during that assessment year, you must do work on your claims at a value of at least $100 per 40-acre claim. And so you must have done that by September 1. And then you have 90 days, in other words, till the end of November, to record what is called the Affidavit of Annual Labor. Now, if you do that, and if you also pay your mining claim rent that is due on September 1, but you have till the end of November to pay that rent, if you do both filing the annual labor and pay your rent, then you're done for the year and your claims are in good standing. If you fail to record your annual labor document, or if you forget to pay your rent, then on December 1, your claims will be declared null and void. However, the state has, within the last few years, implemented a new law saying that if you lose your claims because you did not record it on time, or if you did not pay the rent on time, you can have your claims reinstated if you record your annual labor document late and pay the annual claim rent late, and a penalty fee that is equivalent to 1 year's claim rent. And that, of course, is subject to nobody else having staked that area in the meantime. So if nobody has bothered to go out and stake it, you can reinstate them at a cost. So that's important.
Yeah. And the state sends out this list every after September 1st?
After December 1, they will compile an abandonment report. It normally comes out sometimes in February, and it lists all the claims that have been abandoned as of December 1, and people can go through that list and hopefully not find their own claims in it. And if you should choose to, you can go out and stake those claims that have become open. But keep in mind that people stake claims and drop claims, and then some years later, people find that, aha, there used to be a claim there, I'm going to go and stake it. Well, sometimes you drop claims because, for the very good reason, there's no reason to hold the claim. So people, they come and they go, they stake claims, they drop claims, and they have been doing that throughout history. But as you probably know, Roger, most of the major mines in the U.S., they have been staked and dropped and staked and dropped. And then suddenly somebody drill hole in the right place or comes up with a different model and it turns into a mine. So anyway, that's the history of mining.
Yeah. I think the state's really nice about sending out the list to each claim owner, how many claims they have and what the price is going to be for the rental? And
yes, the claim rent bill comes out right about the first week of September. And they don't call it a bill. Well, it has a bill number, but they call it a courtesy notice. For some legal reason, they don't want to call it a bill, but it is a bill. And so the state sends out these claim rent bills, and if you don't get your bill, you can come to the front counter at the DNR, and they have a copy of all the bills, so you can get a copy of the bill and make the payment. You can also make the payment using your Visa card over the telephone, so you can call DNR in Anchorage and say, the financial services in Anchorage, and say, I'd like to pay bill number whatever, and my Visa card is so-and-so. So you don't have to pay it in person. You can pay it also by sending a check in the mail. If you do that, I would suggest you do it by certified mail, return receipt requested. But using your Visa card would be the preferred way, because once they ring up your amount to Visa, either your Visa card is good or not, and you would know instantly whether you have made that payment or not.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the from my clients up here at the front counter, I always use my Visa card. For that reason, the security of knowing that, yes, it was accepted. And for the reason that you can get a whole bunch of miles and you can travel to Hawaii. So, which is a little bit of a bonus for the work I do.
Sure, yeah. Tell me about the DNR. There's this one in Fairbanks.
Yep.
Yeah. Are there others?
Yes, the main DNR is in Anchorage, and that's where all the claim rent bill comes from. That's where they update the computer system showing who owns claims and who drops claims, and just keep track of all the claim information. It is out of Anchorage, including the land status and all that stuff.
Does Juneau have an office?
They used to, up until probably sort of the mid-70s to early 80s. That's a long time ago, Roger. I know they did, but I never used it. Mm-hmm. But yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This Fairbanks seems to be really active, though. Seems like lots of things happen around here, the Division of Mining, and the handouts and the checking on the computer and things like that.
Yeah, very user-friendly. That's what they do for a living.
Yeah.
They're very nice people, always helpful. One should keep in mind that if you use the computer system to check, if you use TNR's indexes and computer system to check your who owns claims where, and so on, and the land status, it's not always accurate. I have found that I have a few claims on a creek down near Banner Creek, and between myself and my partner, and those claims have been listed under Spectrum Minerals, which has nothing to do with anything. So unless you catch that and you email the DNR in Anchorage to politely saying, hey, would you please correct this, or please note that 6 years ago I purchased these claims, and so don't count on what you see in the computer. The governing the bottom line is that you have the state regulations and statutes and the recorder's office index. That is where the truth lies, not necessarily what comes out of
DNR. That is their interpretation. Sometimes people may have a bad day and you get a wrong ruling on things. So the statutes, the regulations, and the recorder's office, that is your Bible.
Okay. On a different subject, I just was curious, do you see many, like Native Corporation, do they work with companies and have mining, exploration on their lands?
Yes, they do. The Native Corporation's land, you can consider that privately owned land. You have to make a deal, a business deal with the corporation to be allowed to explore on the land and extract minerals on their land or from their land. In many cases, little guys like you and I, if you go and talk to the Native regional corporation that you would like to look at 1 square mile of land, they don't have time for you. It's the big boys with deep pockets that get the opportunity to explore the land, and that's sort of understandable. Not that just the way it is. They're in the, it's their business. They're in the business to make money, and administratively fiddling with a whole bunch of little guys, probably not the smart thing. And the same applies to the Mental Health Trust, which is another entity that owns about 1 million acres of land throughout the state. They too are in the business to make money, and yes, they do negotiate leases with private companies to explore their land, to extract minerals and stuff like that. But if us little guys want to get in there, it's just not going to happen. So.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. I think you've covered things. Yeah.
Good Lord, we still have time. Okay. One of the things that a potential claim owner, if you know, is that if you are a corporation and you want to stake claims in the state of Alaska, you can do that, but only if you are registered to do business in the state of Alaska, and you register with the corporation's office in Juneau. If you're not registered to do business as a corporation or as an LLC in the state of Alaska and you stake claims, they are instantly null and void. You have no rights to stake claims until you are registered with the state, and I have seen a lot of cases where people just simply did not know that, and that's huge. I've seen cases where, I've seen one case where a corporation acquired title to some claims and 4 days later became registered with the state, but that's 4 days too late. So that transaction was declared null and void. Mm-hmm. So that is, there are so many things you need to know. It's all in the statutes and regulations. But if you don't know, the things you don't know could hurt you a lot. So always do your homework. Statutes, regulations, and the recorder's office is where the answers are.
Okay.